This week's Parshat Emor, there's tons of great stuff to talk about in Parshat Emor, because Parshat Emor includes the entire Parshat HaMoadot, the entire calendar, if you will, of the Chagim. What's very tempting, and we've talked about it a number of times during the weeks of Emor, is Sfirat HaOmer. We've talked about the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer, several different angles on that, the issue of mourning during Sfirat HaOmer, we've talked about Lag BaOmer, because the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer chiefly appears in the middle of Parshat Emor. It also is mentioned in Parshat Re'eh, but its main appearance is here, so it's a really convenient thing. So I figured I'd do something else. The highlight of Parshat Emor is the Parshat HaMoadot, which we've talked about in the past, which is the complete system or calendar of the year, the complete calendar of the year, starting with Shabbat, Pesach, Omer, Sfira, Shavuot, all connected, Rosh Hashanah, Kippur, Sukkot, Shmini Atzeret, full calendar. And there's a lot to say about, and it's a very long chapter, there's a lot to say about the calendar and about how all the different pieces fit together. But there's a piece that comes afterwards, which, to be honest, seems a little anticlimactic. You know, Parshat Emor starts with the Kedusha of the Kohanim, and then it goes into the issue of Ba'alei Mum and a Tum'ah, what the Kohanim are restricted from, and the rights of the Kohanim to eat Tum'ah. And then it goes into certain laws of Korbanot, and then it has the full treatment of the calendar, and it's very exciting. And subsequently, there's, in our setup, one more Aliyah, which is chapter 24, not a long chapter. And the second chapter, chapter 24, is very, very surprising and creates curiosity, because there's a story about a fellow who goes out and curses God in the camp, and the people don't know what to do, so they bring it to Moshe. And Hashem then gives the command to have him stoned. But along with that, a whole bunch of other laws about torts. Very weird what it's doing there. But sandwiched in between those are these nine psukim that you have in front of you, which is right after the Parsha of Moadot, you have the command to bring oil for the menorah and the command to prepare the Lechem HaPanim, which we'll talk about briefly, how that's set up, to be put on the Shulchan. And the first question I want to ask is just one of location. Why is this here? In other words, we're in a calendar. We finish the calendar. From the calendar, then we move to this particular story about the Mikalel and what comes after that. But sandwiched in between, we suddenly get this command to bring oil for the menorah and to prepare the Lechem HaPanim, which is strange. So just to clarify, the menorah is something we were already commanded to build, and you see it here on source 2, and the second thing was commanded to build the menorah way back in Shemot at the beginning of Parshat Truma. And even before that, we're commanded to build the Shulchan, which is going to house the Lechem HaPanim. And later on, and we're going to discuss why it's later on in Parshat Truma, it tells us where we're going to put the Shulchan and the menorah. The Shulchan and the Menorah are going to be placed in the Mikdash, in the Mishkan, inside the tent, facing each other, but outside of the Parochet, meaning not in the same zone where the Kodesh HaKodeshim is, not in the same zone where the Aron is. So if you were to walk into the Mikdash, which only Abe, I think, of this group could do, if you were to walk into the Mikdash, and we'd need Paraduma and everything else, we've got a ways to go, then you would see in front of you a tiny little mizbeach with brach haktoret, and then you would see on one side the shulchan, facing it on the other side, which would be on the right side, you'd see the menorah, and then you would see in front of you a curtain, and behind the curtain would be the kodesh hakodeshim with the aron and the kruvim. That's the setup that you would see. So the first question I want to ask is, why is this command given here? Why is it this command given back in Truma when it says to build, set up the menorah, and say, and bring oil for the menorah, what kind of oil? And here's the shulchan, and here's what you're going to put on the shulchan, lechem apanim, and describe how to set up the lechem apanim. If you don't want to put it there, because you're going to argue that Parshat Truma is chiefly dedicated to just construction of the kelim, then at least put it at the end of Truma in source 3, where it says where to place everything. So you're going to place the Shulchan, and you're going to put the Lechem HaPanim on it, and you're going to place the menorah and put the oil on it. Not there. In the beginning of Parshat Tetzaveh, if you recall, there is a command for Bnei Yisrael to bring oil for the menorah, which makes our Parsha a little superfluous. We're already commanded regarding that. So the questions keep piling up. The existence of this Parsha is very strange. And well, I want to read it through, and then I have seven questions here, because you'll see why I picked seven questions. But we're going to read it through and take a look at this. Now, why am I dealing with these two passages as a unit? Because I am. Even though, as you can see, there is a Parsha Ptucha. If you take a look after Pasuk Dalet, right where my cursor is, there's a space. And I did that because in the Torah there's a space. So when you get to the word Tamid, there's a space, and on the next line, Lakachta Solet, because it's a Parsha Ptucha. So why am I dealing with these two paragraphs as if they're one unit? The answer is because they are one unit. How do I know they're one unit? Proof number one. Pasuk Aleph, Vaidaber Adonai El Moshe Lemor. Pasuk He doesn't have that. In other words, Vaidaber Adonai El Moshe Lemor, Hashem speaks to Moshe to tell him to command Bnei Israel to do everything here and everything here. So it's all one command, presented as one command. Okay. Second thing, as we'll see, there are numerous words and phrases that repeat that are found in both of these paragraphs, which drive them together. We'll read it through and take a look. Savet b'nei Yisrael, and you can see it in English, it's all on the screen. Savet b'nei Yisrael, v'ikhoi lacha shemen zayit zach katit lama'or, l'halot ner tamid. By the way, we have a common colloquialism referred to the candle that we leave, the light that we leave always burning in the Beit Knesset as a ner tamid. In Tanakh, there's no such thing as a ner tamid. If you look carefully, the phrase is l'halot ner tamid. And tamid actually refers to the verb l'halot, meaning that it should always be going up. But, all right, we call it ner tamid. But that you have this pure oil that's finely ground so that it will have the flame going always. Michutz l'farochet ta'idut. So it's going to be on the outside of the parochet, which protects the edut. That's the aron. The ohel moed. Ya'aruch oto aharon mi'erev ad boker lifnei Adonai tamid. Aharon will set it up from evening until morning, and it's lifnei Adonai, and it'll be tamid. Chukat olam l'dorotechem. This is a law forever. Al ha'minorah ha'tehora ya'aruch ha'tanerot. So he's going to set it up on the menorah ha'tehorah. Now, where does Aaron light the candles? Well, let's just finish the pasuk. Lifnei Adonai, again, tamid. Tamid repeats here, tamid. We've already seen it three times just in these three psukim, in these four psukim. Where is Aaron setting up the oil? What's he putting it in or on? Putting it on the menorah. What's the menorah made up of? Seven candles, seven holders, seven nerot. And yet in this parasha, the menorah is dealt with as a single unit, not as seven nerot. Unlike what we see in Truma when it's described with all of the details and it's shiva neroteha. Here it's one unit, al ha-menorah ha-tahorah. Okay, now, next thing, v'lakachta solet. You should take fine flour, ve'afita ota, bake it, shteim esrei chalot, 12 loaves. These loaves, by the way, are matzah, by the way. Shnei esronim yeh ha'chala ha'chat. Each chala is 2/10 of an ephah, which means the total here is going to be 2.4 ephah. Ve'samta otam, shteim ma'arachot, sheish ha'ma'arachet. Now notice that word, ma'arachet. And look back in Pasuk Gimel, Ya'aroch, and in Pasuk Dalet, Ya'aroch. So that word shows up in both places. La'aroch is to set up, like aruch, like Shulchan Aruch, a set-up table. So, Shtayim Ma'arachot Sheisha Ma'arachet. So there's going to be two forms, two molds, and six within each mold, or six within each setup. Al HaShulchan HaTahor Lifnei Adonai. Notice, where did Aaron light the candles? Al HaMenorah HaTehora. And here it's Al HaShulchan HaTahor. B'natata Al HaMa'arechet Levonazaka. What are you going to put on each set of six? You're going to put some frankincense. V'itala Lechem La'azkara Yishel Adonai. And that will be an azkara. What's an azkara? I mean, it's a memorial. What kind of memorial is this? It's a very strange phrase. And then we find out, b'yom ha-shabbat yarchen lifnei Adonai tamid. So now, on the one hand, you said you want it to be there tamid, which means all the time. And now we're told that he has to set up the bread every Shabbat. B'yom ha-shabbat, each Shabbat. Yarchenu, he sets it up, lifnei Adonai tamid. Which means you go into the Kodesh and put bread down. Well, you can't keep piling bread on. So what it implies is that you remove the old bread, and that's exactly what we do. We bring the bread in on Shabbat, and the next Shabbat, that bread is removed as the new bread is put on. And a famous machloket, whether one is slid on it while the other is slid off, or whether you take one off and put the other one on later that day, it's still tamid. Mei bnei Yisrael brit olam. This is an everlasting covenant.
What do they do with the bread?
Good. We're going to find out in the next pasuk. Vaitali Aaron Vanav, v'achalu b'makom kadosh. You must have looked ahead. This goes to Aaron and his sons, and they eat it b'makom kadosh. Right? And there's a famous machloket, because this is the point at which the mishmarot would switch. You know, the Kohanim were divided into 24 groupings. They had their own week, one week. Usually it came out to about every 6 months or so that they came to Yerushalayim and it was their week to be on Avodah. And they would arrive on Friday. If there was no Yom Tov involved, they'd arrive on a Friday and start their Avodah midday Shabbat, do their Avodah till the next midday Shabbat, and leave on Sunday. So they were there for two Shabbatot. And the two Mishmarot would split the Lechem HaPanim. It's machlok if they'd split them 6-6 or 5-7. It was eaten by Aharon Uvanav, meaning all the Kohanim, male Kohanim, in the Azara. Ki Kodesh Kodeshim hu lo me'ishe Adonai chok olam. Now, you see how much there's an emphasis here on several things. La'aroch, to set it up, tamid, lifnei Hashem, chok olam. It's very clear that these two parashot are hooked together. And for no other reason, then again, we start off by Dabar Adonai Moshele Mor, and that opening Dibar doesn't exist in the next parsha. It's all one command. So I'd like to take a look at a few questions. The first one is, why are these commands put here after the list of the Moadot? It's a strange location. It should have been put in Truma. Another place they could have been put in is in Pkudei. When Moshe sets up the Mishkan and Hashem commands him where to put everything, so he could have commanded him, and here you're going to put this kind of oil, and then you can put this kind of bread. Instead, it's placed here. Notice that the word tamid is used in both cases, and to set up, which is a word that is not common in the context of the Mishkan, but is used in both places here, la'aruch. Notice that the lechem, the insistence on the lechem, and this is the one place where we're told about the lechem, unlike the menorah, we're told in several places, this is the one place we're told about the lechem, and the lechem is to be set up as two frames of six loaves. So imagine six loaves rising, you know, on six layers, and there are two frames of those facing each other. Why is that the case? Why is Shabbat the day that they're refreshed? And by the way, they don't have to be refreshed at all. You think about it, you could easily have, you bake bread, you put it in, and leave it there and let it be there forever. I mean, if the bread can stay fresh for a week, it can stay fresh forever. So why is it that every Shabbat it's renewed and they take it out to eat it?
Also, didn't you say it was matzah or something like that?
Right, it is, which of course would give it a lot greater staying power. Right, remember, because you cannot put any chametz on the mizbeach, certainly not inside. Right, the only chametz that we have is coming up. The only chametz that we have that goes near the mizbeach is the shtei halachem on Shavuot, which is chametz, and the loaves of a korban todah, 10 out of the 40 loaves of a korban todah. Okay, and a secondary question, an ancillary question is, up here in source 2, the Torah tells us to construct the Shulchan and to construct the menorah. Doesn't tell us where to put them. And only later on at the end of Parsha Truma, in the middle of Parsha Truma, does it say where to put them relative to the parochet and everything else, the structure of the Mishkan. Okay, and the last question is, why is the bread called an azkara? Right, it's a zikaron to what kind of zikaron is it? So I'd like to start with the following premise. The entire purpose of the Mishkan is unlike the Mikdash. The Mikdash is a different purpose, or shall we say several additional purposes to the Mishkan, but the Mishkan itself that we're talking about in the desert, what is its chief raison d'etre? Why does it exist? Why is there a Mishkan?
Even there, isn't it a centralized place to worship?
Centralized place to worship, but I have to remember that worship was actually a relatively insignificant piece of the puzzle during the desert period. Big machloket, how many korbanot, if any, were really brought, besides the ones that we hear about, like the dedication and then that Pesach, whether they brought korbanot in the Midbar. Because God actually spells it out at the beginning, what the purpose is. Okay, so what does that mean?
That he wants to dwell with us.
Right. Now, no place. Yeah, go ahead.
That's it.
Right. So, Basuli Mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham. And then there's another purpose which goes along with that, which is the because you think about it. We talked about this years ago. We talked about Bezalel, that the order of the construction as presented in Truma is not the sequential order, the chronological development that you would build something, but rather it is the teleological development. You start with the goal. And the first thing that you build is the Aron, because the Aron is the goal. The Aron is the purpose. Because you're going to build an Aron, on top of the Aron is a Kaporet, coming from the Kaporet to the Kruvim, and Hashem is going to speak to Moshe Rabbeinu from between the Kruvim and continue to give him mitzvot. V'no'ati l'chasham, that's an important word. V'no'ati l'chasham, I will meet with you at that point. But not just I will meet with you. Also, please take a look at source 11 here. That at the dedication of the finishing the description of the Mishkan, at the end of Parsha Tetzaveh, in the Olivia end of Parsha Tetzaveh, V'no'ati sham b'livnei Yisrael, I'm going to meet with B'nai Yisrael. So let's put those two things together. The pasuk that Abe quoted, go along with the Noati L'chasham. What's the purpose of the Mishkan? It's to meet with God. Meaning, to create a place where God's presence is manifest. God continues to communicate to Moshe Rabbeinu and give more mitzvot. And God and B'nai Yisrael meet. There's an intimate meeting between B'nai Yisrael and God, and that's what the Mishkan is, which is why the pasuk is not v'shachanti v'tocham, it's v'asu l'mikdash v'shachanti v'tocham. V'asu meaning they have to make it. They yes. have to be invested. They have to be stakeholders and put their own in effort involved. And then I will rest among them. And there's a partnership there. Yes, Sam.
Yeah, I've always find it interesting that you have a golden calf. They didn't think God was dead. They thought Moshe, something happened to him. And they wanted to relate to God. They wanted an intermediary. They chose a god of Egypt, a calf. But it was pretty obvious they needed a physical object to channel their religious feelings. And then comes the Mishkan. This is also a physical object. Don't you think that was had right. a lot to do with it?
So there's a huge machloket. You raise a very good point, Sam, which is that there's a huge machloket, and we're going to be going a different direction this year, but there was a huge machloket in which it's pretty much Rambam, although there were others on one side, and Ramban and just about everybody else on the other side, about the Mishkan and about Korbanot and about the entire worship system that we got when we left Mitzrayim, whether it was a concession to where people were at that point in their development and what they could understand, that's the famous Rambam about Korbanot, or whether it represented some sort of an ideal And then the ideal was the famous machloket, Ramban and Ibn Ezra, about whether it was a response to the Egel, and that it was really given after the Egel, or it was an attempt the goal was to create a moving Har Sinai. That's the famous Ramban. But you raise a good point, and the direction you're talking is very much along the lines of the Rambam. It's not exactly along the lines of the Rambam. But what you see here is that the Mishkan, and however you want to parse the reasoning behind it, and the way that we deal with iconography, which is part of the issue you raised, really the issue raised, is the Mishkan is a place of meeting. And that's why the Mishkan is called Ohel Moed. Because Moed really means to meet. But it means to meet by prior arrangement. Lehit Ma'ed. Amos says in Perek Gimel, Hayachushnai in Perek Gimel, Hayachushnai Yachdad Bilti Im Noadu. Will two people walk together if they haven't arranged it in advance? You see two people taking a trip together, you know they arranged in advance. It wasn't just a coincidence. And that's part of Amos's whole series of riddles about causality in the world and God's role. But the Mishkan is the Ohel Moed. It's a place of meeting. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu presents two models of Moed. There's Moed in place, and there is Moed in time. Moed in place is Ohel Moed. Moed in time is Moadei Hashem. And so after constructing the Mishkan, which is the place of meeting, and then giving the description of the Korbanot, which are the vehicle for man coming closer to God when he's moved by X, Y, or Z, by either a feeling of needing to be close, Olam Mincha, a feeling of thanksgiving, shlamim, or a need for expiation, chatat and asham, tzvayikra and tzav, pretty much, then we hear about all the things that will interfere with God's presence, meaning interfere with the Mishkan, in other words, tumah, and how to cleanse it. And it culminates with the cleansing of the Mishkan on a yearly basis, which is Yom HaKippurim. And afterwards, we hear about how that Tum'ah really could involve not just the Mishkan, but the entire Machaneh. And that's Arayot and Kedoshim, etc. And now we come to the status of the Kohanim themselves. And then the next step is there's not only a set place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu meets with Bnei Yisrael, there are set times that are set aside for that. And that is Moadei Hashem. The first Moed is Shabbat. And then after Shabbat, we get Pesach and the Omer and the counting and Shavuot and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Shemini Atzeret. We get the entire system. That is Moed in time. And now the Torah turns its attention to Moed in space. But we already have the space. Yes, but there's something about the space that we don't have yet. And so before going there, I want to show you one other thing. You take a look at the Kohen Gadol's garments. The regular Kohen wears garments that, if you think about it, are essentially functional. The pants, a shirt, a hat, and a belt. Now, they're special. They have special parameters to how they're made and with what material they're made, etc. However, they are essentially functional clothes. The Kohen Gadol's additional four clothes, none of them are functional, meaning they're all there for purely ceremonial purposes, all right? And what are they? The choshen, which is the breastplate, the ephod, which is the apron that goes on his back and loops on top of his shoulders where it connects to the choshen, the me'il, which is the long cloak, and the tzitz, which he wears as a tiara, as it were, okay? We're going to look at two of these right now. In source 8, when we're commanded regarding the begadim, we're told that one of the things the Kohen is going to wear is the ephod, and the ephod is going to come over his shoulders, and on that spot, right above his, right on the top of his, the front of it, on his chest, where they come over his shoulders, there's going to be two rocks, one on each side. And take a look at the text in red, Shisham Mishmotam Al Ha'Evan Achat. You're going to engrave into those stones the names of Bnei Israel. Notice the system. Six names on one stone. And the other six on the other rock. and they're supposed to be done in birth order. Famous discussion among the Rambam and others about whether it goes across like Reuven, Shimon, or does go Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and then on the other side, the other six, what does Ketolotam mean? Okay, but we have the two stones, six names on each stone. That should start to look familiar. And notice that these stones are called Zikaron. Take a look, I'll continue in source 8. Ma'aseh charash evan pituchei chotam tefatach et shtei avanim al shmot b'nei Yisrael, sabot mishpitzot zahav taseh otam. That describes the artisanship. V'samta et shtei avanim al kitfot taifod. So put the two rocks on the two stones on the shoulders of the ephod. Avnei zikaron livnei Yisrael. This is avnei zikaron, gems of commemoration for Bnei Yisrael. V'nasa Aharon et shmotam lifnei Adonai al shtei chtefav v'zikaron. And Aaron will carry them, Aaron the Kohen Gadol will carry them before Hashem as a commemoration. Okay, that's first of all.
So why repeat it?
What?
Why repeat the zikaron two times?
Good. These are avnei zikaron, meaning what the significance of it is, the Bnei Yisrael, and it's a zikaron lifnei Hashem. We're going to see how both of those things play in. Okay? I must have primed you with the questions. Then, at the end of this chapter, we hear about the tzitz. The asita tzitz. The tzitz is the golden strip. Zahav tahor ufitachta la pituchei chotam. You're going to carve into it, engrave into it, what two words? Kodesh l'Adonai. V'samtah otop tiltached v'yal mitznefet. Yeah, it's going to be in front of or underneath the mitznefet, the hat that all kohanim wear. V'yal meitzach Aharon. It's going to be on his forehead. V'nasa Aharon et avon ha-kodashim. He'll bear the sins of the kodashim. Discussion about what that is, but essentially, if something was brought inadvertently b'tumah, this affects ritzui. Shetishu v'Yisrael l'chol matnot kodshem. V'yal mitzcho. Again, tamid. There's that word tamid. L'ratzon lahem, and again, lifnei Adonai, that word, that phrase again. So again, tamin and lifnei Hashem, and suddenly it's with the Kohen Gadol. Okay, last thing I want to do before looking at bringing this all together is to go back to the Parshat HaMoedot. So to sum up, we've seen that the word Moed is applied to two things, to place, the Ohel Moed, and time, Moadei Hashem. We've also seen that the Kohen Gadol, who is the central player in the Mishkan, and really, from the perspective of the Torah, Aharon is the man. It's almost like you don't think about other Kohanim, just the Kohen Gadol. Is that he has these special garments, and one of the special garments seems to be very close in some of the expressions to one of the things we've seen, and that is the six names of Bnei Israel on one stone facing another stone with the other six names. And it's a zikaron. And then he's supposed to wear tzitz, which is Kodesh Lashem. And that's also a zikaron. And both of them are lifnei Hashem. In the case of the tzitz, it's tamid. Last thing is the moadim. You look through the Moadim and you notice, if you want to look at the Jewish calendar, you start, let's say, in Shmot, Chaf Gimel, and then again in Lamed Daled, you see a calendar that only discusses three holidays. Chag Aviv, Chodesh Aviv, Chag HaMatzot, Chag HaKatzir, Chag HaSif. That's it. Right? What we call Pesach Shavuot Sukkot. That's it. You come to this list and suddenly you see Shabbat, Pesach, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, and Shmini Atzeret. Interesting, you take a look at it, and you find that there are seven holidays here. And even though Pesach, it says that the seventh day is an Atzeret, the holy day, it's treated as one holiday, as opposed to Shmini Atzeret, which is presented as a separate day. So you have seven holidays. Or, I'm going to say it a little differently, you have one and six. Because Shabbat, which is treated in the text very differently than the rest, is clearly in a category by itself. First of all, Shabbat, we've already heard about numerous times before this. Second of all, Shabbat, unlike the rest of the Chagim, is all it says about it is you do work for 6 days. 6 days, work shall be done. You don't work on the seventh day, and that's it. The other ones mention Korbanot. They mention something about the holiday. Shavuot gets a lot of treatment because of Sfirah. Rosh Hashanah, we're introduced to Truah. Yom Kippur, we're introduced to Inui, to affliction. And Sukkot, we're given the mitzvot of Arba Minim and Sukkah. Shabbat is very short. So I want to take a look at this not as seven, but as 1 and 6. And how does this parsha start? So in source 10, Vayidaber Adonai Moshe l'Emor, Daber b'nei Yisrael v'amar lehem, Mo'adei Adonai, asher tikra otam mikra'i kodesh, elahem mo'adai. And then Shabbat. And to make the point a little stronger, after Shabbat, the next pasuk is the one that we all know quite well. Elam Mo'adei Adonai, Mikra'i Kodesh, asher tikra otam mo'adam. You know what the next word is, right? Savri. Right?
Vayidaber.
Depends what your minute is, but people want to get to Kiddush quickly. But notice that after Shabbat, we've done Shabbat, and you have the psukim about Shabbat, three psukim, and then there's another introduction, as if to say Shabbat sits by itself, and then these next six are a unit. And the unit ends with, in Pasuk Mem Dalet, by Devar Moshe, Mo'adei Adonai, B'nei Yisrael, very clearly ending it. And so you have this large unit, 44 psukim, starting with Mo'adei Hashem, ending with Mo'adei Hashem. But after the third pasuk, in pasuk Dalet, there's another introduction, as if to say there's another set. Okay, what is it that's going on? So take a look here, and you could see, and you already got this, but you could see here, I color-coded, because like I said, these days I'm just having so much fun because I don't have to worry about printing. So you notice how much these two parashot connect. The first one starts with Tzavet B'nai Yisrael, and the second one ends with Meit B'nai Yisrael. The word Tamid shows up all over here. You notice that Aharon is mentioned. You notice that that Chukat Olam and Chok Olam mentioned in both of them. You notice that here it's Al HaMenorah HaTehora, which is a unique phrase, and here it's Al HaShulchan HaTahor. Again, in a unique phrase. You see the verb, la'aroch, twice in the menorah, four times in the case of the lechem. I mean, there's no question these two parashot are wedded together. But it's specifically when you see parashot, and there's a bit of methodology, when you see parashot that are wedded together, and then suddenly you notice something different about them, that difference is revealing. That difference catches your attention. Because they're going along at a similar pace, and then suddenly something's off. And here's what's off. When we talk about the menorah in the description of how to construct the menorah, we talk about a menorah of three stems, meaning three stems times two, and one in the middle. And the Torah talks about shisha kanim, six stems, and uses that word. And it would be the easiest thing in the world for the Torah here to make that same parallel. Here, sheish hamarechet, six lobes per thing, six stems. It would have been great. And the Torah leaves it out and treats the menorah as one. Here's what I'd like to suggest. And this is all symbolism, and Sam, this will go either way with our discussion. It can be symbolism that speaks to where the people are at now, or it can be symbolism of in a greater sense, an ideal kind of symbolism. It can go either way. The Ohel Moed is the place of meeting. It would be very easy for us to think that God, who is omniscient and omnipotent, has granted us the grace of putting his presence among us. And it's our job, with great care and great reverence, to try to catch some of that glimmer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will have nothing of it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants our partnership. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants our participation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants our presence and our involvement. And we hear that from the very beginning. V'asu l'mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham. Even here, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us to build a Mishkan, he starts up by saying, bring trumot, bring gifts. And each person, according to their own sense of largesse and of motivation, will bring great gifts. Right? So the participation of Bnei Israel is vital to make this happen. So what happens? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, here's how I want you to construct the Mishkan. I want you to construct, and by the way, next to nobody will ever see this, but we'll all know that it's there. Here's the Mishkan. The Mishkan has at its core, at its center, the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the Aron. That's the Kruvim that we hear about. But what's just outside that curtain? Because there is a division. What's outside that curtain? There is a representation of Bnei Israel. So on the one hand, you have the Shulchan and you have the Menorah facing each other. And the Shulchan represents Bnei Israel. How do I know it represents Bnei Israel? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I want you to take six loaves and have them face each other. Does that remind you of something? Does that remind you of standing on Har Gerizim and Har Ebal, the six tribes facing the six tribes? Why not HaKadosh Baruch Hu pick those numbers and pick that system? And so I want you to see this is representing Bnei Israel. And the menorah represents Bnei Israel. The menorah has three facing three with one in the middle. Okay, that's very nice. The menorah is the go-between. Because the menorah, relative to the Aron, is part of Bnei Israel's system. But relative to the Shulchan, it represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Think about it. Look at it physically. You're in the Mishkan. You see the Shulchan, which is low and has these loaves on it. And facing it, not just opposite, facing it is the menorah, which is high and has the lamps that all flicker towards the middle light. And that represents, and we've seen it famously in Zechariah and so many different places, how the menorah represents that. And so the representation of the Mishkan is a place of partnership. Why is it put here? Because after the Moadot, which is the time when Bnei Israel get to meet with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're told that all the time, tamid, look at that word tamid, we are remembered before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, zikaron. We are always being remembered before HaKadosh Baruch Hu because there's always six loaves facing six loaves. They're always corresponding to the pure menorah, which is representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're always there. Now notice, on what day is the Lechem switched? On Shabbat. Think back to the Moadim. How are the Moadim set up? Shabbat and then six holidays. The six holidays, by the way, what's the bracha we say on the holidays? Mikadesh? Yisrael v'hazmanim. That's in our purview. What do we say on Shabbat? Mikadesh ha-Shabbat. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's purview. And so we have this one and six kind of relationship where Shabbat is the one and the Moadim are the six. The menorah is the one, the Shulchan is the six. And now, just to round out the picture, the Kohen Gadol wears two stones, six names facing each other, just like the Shulchan. And above that, on top of his head, is one, which is Kodesh Lashem. That's the menorah. And so we find all three things coming together, which is, in Sifrei Chassidut, they like to refer to it as Olam Shana Nefesh. I put it in little acrostic at the end of the title. The world, meaning place, the Mishkan, Shana, time, that's the Moadim, and Nefesh, person. The Kohen Gadol, when he wears those special clothes, represents the partnership between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Israel. That we are always, Tamid Zikaron, remembered before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the way he wears that. He wears proudly the connection. And the Mishkan always has a Ner and always has Lechem, and they're always facing each other. And the days of the year, the Moadim, are those special times when we interact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming to visit us, which is Shabbat, and sometimes it is we going to visit HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the Moadim, perhaps one way of looking at it. In any case, what we looked at over the course of the last 40 minutes was we looked at the follow-up to Parshat Moadim, which is the strange Parsha of the Lechem HaPanim and the Menorah, what it's doing here at all, and connected it with its location after Parshat Mo'adim, connected it with the weird numeric setup that the Torah emphasizes here. The fact that the Torah does not mention these laws back in Truma, because Truma is setting up the Mishkan. This is setting up Bnei Israel's partnership with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is about Mo'ed. This is about times that we meet with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and ways in which that meeting is symbolized at all times inside the Mishkan. And we connected it also with the special clothes of the Kohen Gadol that also represent that meeting between Bnei Israel and HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Yitz, you should write this one up.
I agree.
Okay.
There's a lot of stuff in here. You got the color.